originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Jude Feld.
Good evening, everyone, wherever you may be. Trainer Talk is on the air. Tonight's broadcast, sponsored by Fasig Tipton, is the show that trainers listen to. This is Jude Feld, and I'm very pleased to spend the next hour with you and our special guest. Tonight's trainer has been a friend of mine for over 30 years. His story is one of tenacity, weathering the ups and downs of our sport and never wavering in his love of thoroughbred racing. 2018 was a banner year for his stable, and as we head into the new year, hopefully a harbinger of more success to come. Welcome to Trainer Talk, Dan Ascarity.
Hey, can we edit that first part? I mean, 30 years already?
I think so.
We've got this out somehow.
But, yeah.
Anyway, Jude, it's good to hear your voice. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year. And happy birthday to all the horses, too.
Yeah.
The Northern Hemisphere, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, they all turned another year older yesterday. Yeah, 30 yeah. years is a long time. It doesn't seem that long ago that we met. And does it seem that long to you?
As you get older, it goes by so fast now. These years go by so fast. You know, Christina Oliveras, who's now Dan Blacker's wife, she interviewed me one time at Hollywood Park. And I go, God, I remember when you were born. And she goes, I'm 30 now, Dan. And that's when I said the same thing. Is this live? Can we edit this out somehow?
Yeah.
It goes by so fast.
Yeah. We had Kristen Mulhall on Trainer Talk one day, and I kind of teased her about my brother putting in a night light in her room before she came home from the hospital. So
did she tell you she just sold one of her ponies to Lady Gaga?
No. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, she sold one of her ponies, and I guess she went up to Malibu, and Lady Gaga comes out in her pajamas, you know, she said it was very interesting meeting her.
That's great. Yes.
Yeah.
Stephanie to her friends.
Yeah.
Yep. That's something. I mean, we were very fortunate to be around for what I like to call the final furlong of the golden age of racing. I mean, Sanita.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
That's for sure. We talk about it constantly. Like, you know, I see Art Sherman here every day, of course, the trainer of California Chrome. And we just go back and we talk about the good old days. And then when I go back up to Santa Anita, you know, I talk with everybody. And it used to be I wasn't there in the 70s, but, you know, 80s, 90s. Those are the horses were great. There was 40,000 people at the races, you know, on the weekends. And it was just so much fun to be there, so much energy. And all the greats, you know, all the great trainers, you know, we work with, you and I work with, of course, Jude with Whittingham and Lucas and, you know, Mandela,
yeah, Laz Barrera, you know. Buster Milrick,
yeah,
Willard
Laz
Proctor.
Barrera. Laz Barrera used to come and watch me play football with Bruce Headley. You know, he's just a great guy. You know, he seemed like a dad to me.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, Bruce is another one. I talk with him all the time, Bruce Headley, about the old days. You know, and it's you just miss that. You miss that so much.
Yeah, that's true. Those little vignettes that Karen Headley puts on Twitter are just priceless. I mean, they're just great.
Bruce would tell me that, you know, I'd see Bruce one day and he'd tell me a story. You know, I'd see him 3 days later. He'd tell me the same story. But you have to laugh.
Yeah.
You still have to laugh just to make him happy.
Yeah.
You know? And
well, plus the stories are always great. Whether you've heard them one time or 30 times, they're still great.
I don't mind hearing them over and over. They're great. Yeah. You just laugh again, you know?
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I love Bruce, you know, but yeah, those were the good old days, you know, and, yeah, you, definitely everybody misses them. Everybody misses them.
And the jocks too. I mean, we had Shue, we had Lafitte, McCarron, Dalhousie, Stevens. I mean, I always like to tell the story. One time I put Alex Solis, who's in the Hall of Fame, on one of Mr. House's horses, and the horse got beat in nose, and Mr. House got mad at me. And I tease him about that now. You know, he kind of laughs about it, but he was really upset. I couldn't get Dalhousie or Stevens.
I know. You have your choice. You had 12 jockeys that are pretty much all Hall of Famers that were there that you had to choose from. And, you know, I like to see that, you know, Gary's still around. I see, you know, Martin Pedroza's still riding, you know, and Corey Nakatani I see every once in a while, you know. And it makes you feel good that they're still kind of around, you know.
Yeah.
Because it still ties you to the good old days.
Yeah.
You know, and then I saw Lafitte Pinkeye the other day, said hi to him. He was at the races, and every once in a while I see Eddie Dalhousie come by. And, you know, Eddie's like such a great guy. And I just love that these people are still around, and you can say hi to them and talk about the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I see Eddie at the sales here at Keeneland once in a while. And you know, we talk about the old days too. I guess we're all old men now, so that's what we
talk about. It. Kenny Black the other day, I called him Grandpa. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, Kenny Black's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, I am too. So what are you gonna do?
I know, it's hard to believe.
Yeah.
But so it's fun there. It's fun. I just wish somehow we can go back to those days.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a blast. Yeah. What sparked your interest in thoroughbred racing?
Well, you know, I was down playing. Actually, I was on O.J. Simpson's softball team back in the early '80s down in L.A. We were playing at Rexford Park or Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills. And I was going to go to UCLA. I wanted to play some football there. My dad knew the coach, so I was going to get in there. And I played a little semi-pro football down there. And then I got a call from Wally DeLazzi, and everybody should know Wally. He's my uncle. And I'm sure with a little urging from my mom, you know, had him call me to say, come up and work at the farm, Dan. What are you doing down there, you know? And so I thought it over, and you know, I wasn't going to do anything at UCLA, really. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do. And, you know, every time I made an error, didn't get a base hit, I was worried about OJ going to kill me. I'm just kidding. No, that's not true. He'd only kill me if I made an error. But, no, OJ was a good guy. But I just said, what am I going to do? So I decided, you know what, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to give it a try. So I went up to Rio Vista in Atascadero, which Wally owned that farm at the time. It was a breeding and he got two-year-olds ready for the two-year-old training sale down at Hollywood Park. And I just went up there. I didn't know anything about horses. And my first job up there was grabbing a hammer and going out early in the morning and breaking the ice off of the water troughs out in the pastures, you know, because I didn't really know anything about horses. So that, I guess that was a good job for me. And then I just held broodmares all day long to get shod. And I did that, you know, until until my toe healed, my right toe, because it got stepped on so much, you know, from not knowing anything. And I tell you, that I still use that for people today. I said, if a horse is going to step on your foot, move it, you know,
just move. It's a good idea.
I learned that my first year I was at the farm. I learned that, and I still pass that on. I think that's good advice. But So then I just kind of, you know, learned everything at the farm and moved over to the two-year-old training sale barn and got to know, you know, start breaking the horses over there. And I've always liked horse racing. I always had an interest, but I never worked with horses, you know, being, you know, involved in all the sports. I always watched the Kentucky Derby, you know, and everything. And I just had an interest. So when I got to the farm, I got real excited about it. And just working with the animals and outdoors, I mean, it's one of the best jobs you can have. And so eventually we start doing the two-year-old training sales down at Hollywood Park. And I would go down there and with the horses and then come back up. And, you know, and eventually Wally decided he wanted to get his trainer's license. So we all moved down there. But I'm going to tell you a quick story about Wally. If anyone knows him, he's, you know, he's a very good horseman. He's, you know, he's very serious and everything. And we used to have these barbecues and a softball game at the farm, you know, every once in a while. And Wally just had surgery on his knee, and it was as big as a basketball. I mean, his right knee was as big as a basketball, and he'd always want to play, but he just ended up, he was just going to be the pitcher. It was a softball game. He was just going to be the pitcher. And he makes an announcement. Okay, everybody, The knee is off limits. Stay away from the knee, you know. And everybody's, yeah, right. And, dude, the first pitch that he throws, the guy hits a line drive off his right knee, and it trickles over to third base. Wally hit the ground so hard, he says, you know what? Game over. Game over. That was it. You know, it's just like, we laughed so hard, and we still laugh when I tell Craig DeLazze, my cousin Craig.
Right.
We still tell that story, and we laugh and laugh at that, you know.
Well, that's, anyway, it was that's good. The way life works, right?
Oh, my gosh. It was, he made the announcement, and it was the first pitch.
Oh,
it wasn't the fifth pitch. It wasn't the 20th. The first pitch ricocheted right off his bad knee. And that was it. But that was such a – oh, my God, that was a great story. But Wally was such a great horseman, obviously, with all his great horses that he had, you know, a lot from him. And just when I got down to the racetracks down there, Santa Anita – Hollywood Park in Del Mar, it's just, you just get hooked and you can't get away from it. You know, I've tried a few times and you always come back.
Yeah. It's it gets in your blood. It's a lifestyle. I saw on your Instagram, you posted a picture of Del Mar. And you said, where else would you rather be? and I kind of laughed when I saw it. Cause I mean, that's the feeling that you get. I mean, once you get there, when Hollywood Park used to be over and you'd get there, you just kind of relaxed. Your horses did the same thing. And,
yeah. And
I sit here in the studio now during the summer times and do the afternoon shows and you watch the beach cam from Del Mar and you see the waves and the sky is so blue. It's just incredible. And you just think to yourself, man, would I love to be there right now?
Well, especially for you. I mean, you are always in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt.
Still.
You know, you belong on the beach, you know, not in Kentucky where it's freezing cold. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, well, I remember you always had the Hawaiian shirt on and the shorts.
Yep.
All the time. Yep.
Yep.
So, yeah, so you have to really miss the beach.
Yeah, I do miss the beach. I get to go to Florida a few times a year in the wintertime, which I dearly love. Got a trip coming up at the end of this month for the Pegasus World Cup. So, I'll be back in uniform.
No, that's great. That's great.
So Wally, you know, he sired three trainers, Michelle, Amy, and Craig, right? I mean, he's got a whole family in the sport.
He didn't sire me.
He didn't sire you, but I mean, you're his nephew. Yeah.
Yeah, he's my uncle, and I learned from him. And obviously, he taught Craig well, you know, because, you know, Craig had some great horses, Awesome Gem and Re-Raise, you know, who won the Breeders' Cup. And Wally also did, you know, he won the Breeders' Cup too. And Craig kind of followed his footsteps. And then Michelle, she's down at San Luis Rey now. And she's taking care of, I think, Carla Gaines's horses and Mandela's horses, and I think a few of her own.
Yeah,
and then there's
Amy. She was working for Tom Proctor for a while. I don't know if she still does or not.
Yeah, Tom. She was working for Tom and Graham Motion, and I haven't talked to Amy in a while. I haven't seen her since I've been down here, really. But I know Tom Proctor would always tell me that he was scared to death of her. One time Tom and I were walking back from the gap at Santa Anita, and he saw Amy coming, and Amy's his assistant trainer. And he goes, "No, we got to go this way. We got to go around here." I go, "Why? There's Amy's coming this way. That's your assistant. Don't you need to talk?" "No, I'm scared to death of her." So we had to go all the way around the barn area to avoid her. Tom's hilarious, you know.
I don't think Tom was afraid of anybody.
Well, he was afraid of Amy, and he'll admit it if you ever talk to him. Tell him, who are you afraid of most in your life? He'll say Amy DeLazze.
I'll have to call him out when he comes for Keeneland.
And Amy's such a sweet little thing, you know.
Yeah, so. No, she's great. I love Amy. She's a great horsewoman, and she's just fun to be around. She's fantastic.
Yeah, we all grew up together at the farm, you know, so. Again, a lot of memories out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And in case you're just joining us, this is Jude Feld, and you're listening to Trainer Talk with Dan Iscariti. So you left the farm and you came to the track. What was the catalyst, or what made you decide that you wanted to be a trainer?
Well, you know, I'm very competitive. I played all the sports in my life, you know, and I'm very competitive. And I thought, man, you know, I'm not going to be a pro athlete, you know, and so here's the next best thing. I can train, you know, athletes, and win races and be competitive and the whole sport. And I thought, oh, this is great, you know. I just said, I got to get my trainer's license. I got to get my trainer. I don't want to be an assistant, which, you know, I really think back in the day, I should have been an assistant for a while for somebody like most of these young trainers come up now, and they've been assistants of top trainers, and they're very successful. But I just didn't have the patience. I just wanted to go and get my trainer's license and get some horses and train them. I couldn't wait. I was counting the days before I can do that. So I got my trainer's license, and I just wanted a few owners. I didn't want a big barn, you know. I just wanted a few owners, few good owners, and just have fun with horses. I didn't care if it was a $10,000 claimer, which they were back in the day, like 10 is the bottom there. And, you know, I didn't care if it was a $10,000 claimer, a 12.5, you know, or maybe a 20. I was like, wow, a 20 claimer, that was big for me, you know, back then. I didn't care. To win a race, I had just as much of a thrill winning that race than, you know, an allowance race. You know, it's just because you fall in love with these animals and you get to know them so well, and just to see them win in front of 40,000 people at Santa Anita cheering, you know, it's not like that anymore, of course, but, you know, everybody cheering for your horse going down the stretch and everybody congratulating you. It's fun, you know?
Yeah, no, there's nothing like winning a race. We talk about it a lot on this program, and, you know, if you could bottle that feeling, you could be a gazillionaire.
That's why, unfortunately, I have bottled that feeling, and that's why I'm still here plugging away. Yeah, I don't think I finally got my first day off in the last year, last week at Christmas. I took a day off. Everybody's like, where were you?
Yeah.
You know, and my one owner that I've had for 3 years now, he's a great owner. He was like, that's the first time I've seen you take a day off since you've been my trainer. You know, you just, this is where you want to be, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
says, let's go to Hawaii. Let's go do this. No, I just want to stay with the horses, you know, and I've bottled that up, and it's weird. If anyone's ever, I'm sure all the trainers that you talk to or anybody that's listening right now that is a trainer, they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no,
it's
that's
very addicting.
Yeah.
You obviously, you know, you were a trainer. It's very addicting and you can't get away from it. You know, sometimes I'll go to bed at 7 o'clock at night because I can't wait to get back and, you know, to the barn in the morning.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a great feeling when you can get up and you can't wait to get to work. And I was lucky enough to have that feeling for 20 years. I mean, it was always so exciting to me to get up and go to the barn. I couldn't wait to get there. And, you know, and it's funny because you get into the routine. You do the same thing every morning. You get the newspaper out of the box. You walk to your barn. You put the coffee pot on. You know, you go over yesterday's charts. You do all this stuff. And then you go look at the horses. And you're doing the same thing every day, 365 days a year. And you just can't wait to get there. Most people would be bored stiff, right?
I know. They're doing the same thing over and over. And you can't wait to get back there, especially after you won a race. That is always the best feeling when you come to the barn next morning after you just won a race. And again, it doesn't matter what kind of race it was, you won, everybody's congratulating you, and it's just a good feeling, you know. You can't wait to get to the barn, see that horse, and then get the other ones ready to win. And it's there's no better feeling. It's addicting. And you know, we've been here, you know, on top of, you know, I've known you for 30 years now, you said, and you know, I see some of the same people here at La Salle that I was at Santa Anita with back in the 80s.
Right.
They're still here. There's some of them still galloping. You know, it's crazy. They're in their 50s and they're still galloping, or now they're grooms or assistant for somebody. You know, they can't leave the business.
Yeah.
You know,
it is addicting. And I only had two vacations in 20 years. And I spent one of those vacation days in the Agua Caliente bookie shop in Cabo San Lucas, because I had three horses running. So I went to the bookie shop and watched my horses run, and that was like torture, you know, not being at the track, watching your horses run from afar. So especially, you know, I had a small stable too, as you know, and when you're that up close with your horses like that, it's like, you know, you just want to be there. So
yeah, I had to go to Vegas one time for a friend's wedding, and I just couldn't wait to get to the book. So I went to, and I had a horse running. So I was like, it was killing me that I wasn't there. So I went over to the Caesars book. You know, back then we didn't have it on our phones and everything.
Right.
You know, like we could. And so I'm watching it at the Caesars book, and my horse wins the race. and the guy next to me is, that trainer, he never wins. You know, he's all yelling, you know. And I, little does he know, that trainer was sitting right next to him.
Did you say anything?
No, I didn't say anything. I didn't want to get in a fight. My horse just won. I didn't want him to punch me. You know, these guys, they lose. It's amazing, though, these gamblers, they know everything about your horses. You know, and they're just as passionate as we are.
Right.
You know, the people that gamble like, oh, you're Dan Iscariti? Oh, my God. You know, back in 1992, Hollywood Park, it was the fourth race. You had a horse and blah, 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 and it was 7-2, and you won by 4.5 lengths. And I'm like, yeah, I did. Really? That happened? It's amazing that these guys.
Oh, they remember. They remember everything. They'll tell you the program number, the whole nine yards. I was coming.
That's what he did.
Yeah. I was coming back from Del Mar, and the guy in the TSA line, he looked at my ticket and my driver's license, and he goes, you're Jude Feld? And I said, yeah. And he goes, the trainer? And I go, well, I used to train horses. He goes, oh, my God. One Del Mar, and he goes into this long story, right? That's, which was great. I was loving it. But the line is getting stacked up behind me, and people are going, who is this guy? What did he do? Why doesn't he have his papers in order, right? Everybody's looking at me like I, you know, they wanted to haul me out of line, and this guy's going on and on and on, and I finally kind of just had to tell him, like, we're holding up the line. Oh, yeah. He goes, yeah, I guess we better.
You start to feel embarrassed. Yeah. But then you appreciate it that people do, you know, They do remember this stuff, and they're passionate, because without them, where would we be?
Yeah, you know? No, I love it. I love that people remember they cashed a ticket on one of my horses or whatever. But I had a similar situation to you when I remember when Santa Barbara was the only place you could go to bet San Francisco.
Oh, that's a fairground.
Yeah.
So
I had two horses in the nightcap at Golden Gate Fields. And my brothers and my brother Mark's brother-in-law, we all drove up there to watch these horses run. They all had pieces of the horses or whatever. So we're sitting there last race. We got killed all day long. We had almost no money left. We made my brother Mark keep $50 out for McDonald's on the way home, and then we all bet the rest. And this guy's sitting there telling his girlfriend what a betting coup that Jude Feld's pulling off here, and he had the whole race set up. And we are just dying laughing, because like I got $10 left, and my brother Bob's got like 10 or 20, and I mean, between all of us, we didn't even have $100, and here we are. I've engineered this great betting coup where we're gonna make thousands of dollars, and he's telling his girlfriend, you know, what a crook I am and all this jazz. And it was so funny. And it ended up running second and fourth. But it was one of the funniest bits I ever heard.
It's funny how much longer that drive is to Santa Barbara when you're driving home after losing.
Yeah. And you got to stop at McDonald's for dinner.
Because you guys are pulling your money together to stop, you know, to eat something.
Yeah.
But that's the way it was back in the old days. Yeah, you used to have to drive for a simulcast. It's just crazy how it's changed so much.
Yeah.
You know, like I said earlier, you know, we used to, the crowd was deafening, 25,000, 40,000 on weekends when your horse is running down the stretch, you know, now, you know, I got 500 people cheering for me here at La Salle. Maybe 40,000 people are watching my horse run all the simulcasting and stuff all over the world, but only 500 are cheering live here, but it's still a thrill. They're all screaming. They're very passionate here at La Salle, the fans, you know.
That's a great thing about La Salle. I mean, I was there one night, and there were four school teachers. And they had pooled their money and got a $2,500 claimer. And they had all their kids and their families there, and the horse won. And it was so refreshing to see the excitement and how great the kids were, you know, feeling about the horse winning. And it was a little cheap horse, but it was so joyful for these four guys and their families. It was just awesome.
The thrill was still there.
Yeah.
You know, if it was winning at La Salle, or, you know, especially if they were new into the business, the thrill, this is what they know. And they were like, oh, they invite all their friends. And I have owners that will invite all their friends, and it's a $2,500 claimer, but they still get dressed up, and they get so excited, and the horse wins. And it's just, it's still a thrill. The thrill is still there. You know, I've been around forever, and the thrill is still there when you win a race. And here, even at La Salle, for $2,500.
Yeah.
It's not easy to win here.
It's not easy to win anywhere.
But you got a $2,500 $100 horse at 32 or whatever, four or five. But you got to compete against those horses here. And then, you know, these horses are pretty much, you know, they're on their last leg, you know, they're getting older, retiring, or they got, you know, mental issues or whatever. So you really got to do a lot of work to get them to the races here. And then these races are only four and a half, four furlong. Sometimes you can run your thoroughbred against an 870 quarter horse and stuff. But once you get them to the race, it's got to be a clean trip because it happens so quick here. If you break a little slow or go wide or get bumped or something, the race is over. It's depressing. You know, you don't have a chance to recover on the longer races like up at Santa Anita or Del Mar. So you're more intense here because, okay, let's get a good break. Okay, we got a good break. Now let's don't go wide, you know. The whole race, you're stressed out the whole race until it's over. It happens quick. But
yeah, thank God it's only 51 seconds, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice if I had one that can win 51. But no, I have. But, yeah, so it's fun. I love it down here. Everybody's so close-knit. You know, it's almost kind of like the old days where everybody just, you know, they all were rooting for you. They're saying hi to you every morning, and it's a good little track. You know, you really feel at home here.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a nice place. I've always enjoyed running horses there, and I love the atmosphere. It's a nice clean place. It's a good place to go, and they treat you good. The people that work at Los Alamitos are very nice.
They're great. You know, and you know, and the stewards here is our old friend Tom Ward.
Oh really?
He's down here now.
Uh huh.
So yeah.
Yeah, he's a good man. He's a very calm guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And then it's just so fun. Like every, you know, we talk, Art Sherman and I, we just crack up every morning talking about the old days and stuff. And he's down here, and you know, it's I love it here. I love it here. You know, we had a pretty good year here, so hopefully this year will even be better. Matter of fact, when I won my first race here back in 1999, I actually ran two horses here, and then I didn't run again until a couple years ago. But a girl rode my horse named C.C. Perkinson. She won both my races. I was undefeated here until a couple years ago. And she says to say hi.
Okay. Will.
Yeah. That's... She says, oh, you have to say hi. You're going to be on Jude's radio show? Yeah. You've got to say hi to him for me.
All right. So, I'll send her a note and tell her thank you. This is Jude Feld, and you're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Dan Ascarity and I will be back after this short break.
Nominate now to the 2019 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday, with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th, a program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizu with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
On a around the far turn. They go on the one they're going to have to catch. This Dallas Princess, who hugs the rails, now a length in front. Holiday in Cambodia is now on the move for Juan Sanchez. Here comes Holiday in Cambodia and still has to get this Dallas Princess, who has a two-length lead for the 16th to go. But Holiday in Cambodia has these big strides, is closing in. Here comes Holiday in Cambodia. Dallas Princess along the inside. Holiday in Cambodia is up in the final strides to beat out Dallas Princess. 5 lengths back to Holy Plan, who finished at a shot.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. This is Jude Feld with our special guest, trainer Dan Ascarity. I want to remind you that if you missed any portion of this show, it will be archived on our website, horseracingradio.net, and is also available at Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. That was the Ed Burkhart race call in the rejoin of Holiday in Cambodia, a horse who was an integral part of your success in 2018, Dan. He's a son of Harlan's Holiday, who was named for the popular 1980 song by the punk band Dead Kennedys. Bred in Kentucky by trainer Dale Roman's brother Jerry, now he's the house horse owned and trained by Dan Ascarity. What about him?
Her?
Her. Excuse me.
Her. Yeah, she's been a little hard knocker for me. We won day and night here. You know, they have a day meet here 3 times a year. And that's a lot of fun, too. You know, just they have that day meet, then it goes right on to the evening, and everybody sticks around for the night racing also. And, I was going to enter at night, and I didn't realize that the rule for workouts is different for the day than it is for night here. Night is like 45 days, day is 30, and I realized I was at 31 days, so I had to scratch out, you know,
her
a couple of times, and we ended up winning. It was just it always works out, it seems like. But I ended up having to work her and then run during the day, and she won. So I was happy about that, you know, especially since I own her. You know, it's always nice to run horses and win when you own them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a big boost.
Yeah, it's a little extra bonus. But, she's been a little hard knocker for me, and along with Irish and Lucky, we won a couple races with her this year, and I love those two fillies. They've been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've always had a way with the fillies.
Pardon me?
You've always had a way with the fillies.
Can we edit that out too? Somehow? We got a lot of editing to do on the show.
Well, Lee's an expert at it. So
Remember that, speaking of fillies, I was going to remind you, remember that Triple Dead Heat I was in at Hollywood Park? I think that was probably the most fun I've ever had in a race, winning a race.
Yeah, I remember.
This will never happen in any of our lifetimes or any of the listeners' lifetime. You'll never see that again, where there was a walkover in a Triple Dead Heat on the same card at Hollywood Park.
Yeah,
we'll never see that again.
That's safe to say. Happening. Yeah, very, very, very rare.
Yeah, that was a weird day, but that was a fun day. Very unusual.
The walkover, was that Spain? Was Spain the one?
No, that was Sharp Cat.
Sharp Cat.
Wayne Lucas's horse.
Okay.
And in the Bayacoa, and then a couple races later, we had this Triple Dead Heat. I thought I won it. I wanted to see the picture. I thought I won it. My horse was completely clean. Everybody else was dirty because it was a muddy track. That's why there were so many scratches in the stake. And no, it was a Triple Dead Heat. So we had to split the whopping purse of $8,000 between the three of us.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing about the good old days that wasn't so good was the purse money.
that wasn't good. And it seems like I'm still paying the same amount to everybody nowadays than I did back then.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah. But it was fun. I walk into Pepper's, and there's a big old picture of the Pepper's. Well, it's a Mexican restaurant across the street from Santa Anita, if our listeners don't know. But and it is a big old picture of the Triple Dead Heat. Really cool picture they have hanging on the wall there. So that's probably my claim to fame, unfortunately. It's just a Triple Dead Heat and an 8,000 claimer at Hollywood Park back in December of 97. But that was fun.
Well,
the Hollywood Park timeline too, the historic timeline, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's a cool thing that they have that immortalized on the wall of the restaurant. That's really cool.
Yeah, Pepper's, yeah. I sure wish Hollywood Park was back open. Now, what a great track that was to train on, you know, with the training track and the main track.
Oh, the training track at Hollywood Park. Oh, that was the best track.
It was the best track to train on, and there's no doubt about it. And it's too bad. Now we got to go over and sit on that track and watch football.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole different world.
It's so strange.
Yeah.
But they do still call it. They said, oh, the Rams are going to be playing, you know, at Hollywood Park. You know, they're still mentioning that on the news a lot, that the Hollywood Park, you know, Hollywood Park, you know.
So, yeah. Well, that's,
so I guess really,
that's
they know
good,
people,
I guess.
People know where Hollywood Park is, of course, so I guess they're using that for now.
Yeah.
So people kind of know where the stadium is.
Yeah, it's
another story about Hollywood for Wally. You know, Wally was coming back from Hollywood Park, going down Century Boulevard, not Century, Manchester there, and he had to stop and get gas, you know. And it's not the best of areas there. And he, so he gets out of the car, he puts his wallet up on the gas pump. And, of course, somebody comes and swipes it away, you know, and starts running. And I'm not going to say the color of the guy, but he was fast. And so Wally's trying to chase him. You know, what's Wally going to do? You know, he's 6'3", you know, but he starts chasing him. And then there was this backfire of this car. And Wally stops like on a dime and he starts feeling him, you know, he starts touching himself. He thought he was shot. it's hilarious. I mean, it's just crazy. That guy, how serious he was and what a good horseman it was. He's done some funny stuff.
Yeah. Well, he always did feel like nothing was ever going to happen to him, you know. He always had that kind of attitude, so.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I miss Hollywood Park. It's great, great days over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You won a lot of races there, too.
I won some. It wasn't a meeting that I pointed for. I'll tell you the one thing that I always remembered Hollywood Park for was I had won 6 races 1 week, which was, I think that's the only time in my life I ever won 6 races in a week. And this guy shows up at my office and he says, "Are you Jude Feld?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Hi, I'm Mike House." And I said, "Oh, you're the guy with the happy face on his silks." And he goes, "Yeah, how did you know that?" I said, "Well, everybody knows the happy face silks. I mean, you know." And he says, "Are you looking for any customers?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "But isn't what was Dale, McAnally's assistant. What's his
name? Oh, Dan.
Dan? Yeah, Dan's dad. What's Dan's last name?
Oh,
Landers. Danny Landers.
Yes, Landers.
Yeah, Dale. I said, "Isn't Dale Landers your trainer?" And he goes, "Yeah." He says, "But Dale says he's getting older and he doesn't want to go to Del Mar. And I live in Del Mar and I need a trainer that's going to be down there because that's where my home is. And I like to bring the kids to the track and blah, blah, blah." So I said, "Yeah, that's fine." I said, did you tell Dale?" He said, "Oh, yeah, Dale knows. He's fine with it." He said, "You know, he's just not going. I'm going to still have horses with Dale and this and that." So I said, "Well, that'd be great." He says, "Well, I got a check for $25,000. I'm going to put it in the office and I'll make you authorized agent. And when you see something, claim something." So that turned into, you know, what's been like a 30-year relationship with Mr. House, who, you know, I ran his farm here in Kentucky and all of that. And the first horse we claimed was a horse named Plenty Conscious. He won a bunch of races for us, over $100,000 and set a track record at Hollywood Park. And that's my best Hollywood Park story.
Yeah, the good old days. Yeah, you did. I remember. I always followed you, of course, because we were friends, you know. And man, I just love watching your horses win. Also, and you had some good ones.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I was lucky to have some decent horses.
Did you ever tell our? Did you ever tell your fans that? That we're golf champions?
No, I was wondering. Do you still play golf?
I don't play as much anymore. Everybody, you know, everybody's grown older and they have their families and it's not like the, you know, again, it's not like the old days. We used to play golf twice a week, you know, over there at Santa Anita and stuff. But, no, I always remember that we won that golf tournament by 12 shots.
Yeah.
And, thanks to your handicap, but that was a lot of fun.
My handicap was very good.
we got a shot a hole. Thanks to Jude Feld's handicap. We won that. I always remember that we played in that tournament over, where is it? Fenley Hills or Whittier or somewhere like that?
Yeah. I think it might've been Fenley Hills. Yeah.
That was a fun day too.
We used to play every week. We played every Tuesday, rain or shine, pretty much.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Right across the street, we used to go and play, and that was fun. You know, like everything, we used to bowl on Saturday nights. We used to play volleyball down at Del Mar, and you know, we had our our 14-team softball league, you know, at Santa Anita. We used to play all the time. And, yeah, that's just I don't think that's happening anymore. No. I haven't heard anybody playing.
No, everybody on the backside used to be really close. You know, when I tell people that, you know, I used to bowl with Gary Stevens and his wife in a league, and they look at me like I'm from Mars, you know?
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
I used to bowl? You know?
Yeah. First of all, that we were bowling. And second of all, that the jocks, the best jocks in the room were all bowling on Saturday night. You know?
Everybody would do everything together.
Yeah.
You know?
And we'd go out to dinner, and you know, people would have each other over to their houses. And, you know, my kids grew up with Gary Stevens' kids. They grew up with Christine Olivares and there was one big happy family. Now I'm very happy to see now that it's kind of recurring. Like all of our kids are still hanging out with one another, and now their kids are hanging out with the other guys and gals kids. So it's starting to come around again, and I think maybe we'll see that again in the future. But for a long, long time,
there was a big hole.
Yeah, where.
I remember one time, you know, when I was first got to Wally's Farm up there back in the early '80s. You know, so I started reading all these books to learn the business, and you know, Lasbro and Charlie Winningham, and read a lot about Bill Shoemaker. You know, like, wow, these guys are legends. And then before you know it, you're working with them, you know, at the racetrack, and they just become normal people to you, you know, and friends of yours. And it's just so strange to read about them, to learn about them, their ways and everything. And then you're working with them and you're competing against them. And I just remember one night I was at a barbecue. I don't know if it was Michael Winningham's or Jackie Fulton's house or whatever, but we were in a barbecue and Bill Shoemaker and I were in charge of the barbecue. And I was just like, oh my God, Bill Shoemaker, what do I say to him? All he wanted to do was tell dirty jokes, you know. He was just like a completely normal guy. But you read about him in these books, and you're like, you know, you put him way up on a pedestal, like, oh my gosh. And then, and then here he is, you know. Hey Dan, tell me another, you know, story or whatever. You know, it's just like, it's crazy, you know, how they become so human once you get to know them and you compete with them. And my very first jock I put on a horse was Bill Shoemaker. So it was just crazy how you're just in awe of these guys. And then Lasbro used to come and watch me play football, you know,
right,
with Bruce Headley. And it's just they're human, you know. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I've said it a bunch of times, and I heard you say it today. Lasbro was like a second dad to me. I mean, you know, he really was. I mean, he really, you know, tried to take care of me as much as possible, gave me great advice, helped me many, many times when I was a young trainer. I can't say enough nice things about Laz. But Charlie was the same way. If you asked Charlie a question, he'd be more than happy to help you, you know.
And I didn't find him as approachable, though. You know, he didn't seem that approachable. Maybe I didn't really know him that well, you know. But Laz, I can just walk up to any time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I felt very comfortable around him. But man, Charlie, matter of fact, it was weird. John Daly, who was a assistant for Charlie Winningham, we actually went to Charlie's grave site the other day up at the Sierra Madre.
Oh, really?
It was kind of cool to be there, you know, and just brought back a lot of memories of all his wins and all his great horses and stuff, and always riding Shoemaker and stuff. That was kind of a weird moment, but it was cool to go see him.
Yeah, that's neat. Well, he was maybe a little standoffish sometimes, but once he got to know you, he was a fine guy too. I mean, he was, you know, always happy to help in any way that he could, and
everybody said he's a great guy, but I just never I never got around to approaching him or talking to him, and it was very strange. Maybe I was just in awe of the guy. Maybe I just, you know, I can't go talk to him, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody always said just great things. So what a great human being he was, and also obviously a trainer too.
Yeah, he loved to give me a ration of, you know what, he was always. One day he had his Elmer Fudd hat on, you know, that hunting cap with the flaps, and it was hot outside. It was like 80 degrees, and it was like 9:30. He was going to work some horse on the turf, and he still had that hat on, and And I said, Charlie, I said, it's 80 degrees. Do you really need that hat? He goes, well, I don't have that layer of blubber on me like you do.
Oh, he's always
got
to come back. He's always got to come back with something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had that type of humor. That's for sure.
Yeah. So
I've never seen pictures of him riding horses on the beach at Del Mar.
Oh yeah. You know? He had a beautiful house at Del Mar. You mentioned barbecuing with Shoemaker. My brother Bob and I, we were dating a couple of his exercise girls, and he'd go out to dinner, and the girls would see if we could use the barbecue out on the beach, and, oh, yeah, go ahead. And so we'd get carne asada and stuff and cook out there and have great nights on the beach at Del Mar at Charlie's house. And the house was dark, but the barbecue was glowing. And one night he had a little bit too much to drink. He came home and Bob was talking to one of his exercise girls, and he put Bob in a headlock, damn near killed him.
Wasn't he a Marine or something?
Yeah, he was a Marine. He was tough.
Yeah, yeah. So,
he was tough.
You don't want to mess with a Marine.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So
tough guy. Yep. Yeah. That's more of the good old days.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to try to make some more good old days here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you had a great year. You won 26% of your starts in 2018. You finished in the money 51% of the time. I don't even know if you know that because you don't pay attention to stats very much.
No, I don't keep an eye on stats, but that much. But my handicapping friends do, and they let me know every once in a while how I'm doing.
Well, that's good.
But I hope this year is even better. You know, I've given everybody a little bit of a break right now, so I won't be running for a couple of weeks. But but all my horses should be running. Should be running well again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So, what's your favorite kind of horse to train?
I like the claimers. I really do. I mean, I haven't had that much experience with allowance or stake horses, but I love the hard knocking horses that might have some issues, you know, but they got the big hearts, you know, and you know, a horse might have an old bow or an old knee or something, and they go and win a race for you. Because they got such a big heart. I love those type of horses. Those are the kind of horses I always seem to have and train. I love those horses that can run through issues and problems and win a race for you. And that's really my favorite type of horse.
Yeah, it always makes you feel good when you can do something with a horse like that. Yeah, what's maybe your mind your most outstanding training job?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm not saying there's a lot of them, but it's hard to say. I really have to think about that one because, you know, I do get horses that, you know, no one else wants anymore. And I'll take them in because it's a challenge to me. I like to get horses that might have a bow or you know, some knee problems or foot issues or whatever. And I like to think, because I take my time, I learned this from Wally, he's very patient. You don't see him running horses all the time. He won't run a horse unless it's ready. It's 110% ready to run, you know, and it's completely sound. And I like taking horses that might have had problems and people don't want to deal with anymore. And I'll give them the time and I'll fix them up and get them back to the races. It's a challenge to me, and I like that challenge. I really do. I can't say who's my greatest achievement. I mean,
well, that's
the only 2 year old I ever had that I've ever had as far as training goes was a horse named Snows in Paris. You might remember that horse back in 89. I bought the horse for $25,000 at a sale and for Alan Steinle. Remember him?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the only 2 year old I've ever had. And we went to the Remington Park Derby in 89, and if we would have won that, we probably would have went to the Kentucky Derby. But there was a synthetic track at the time. I mean, you'd have to change your shoes every time you walked on it. It was so sticky, and it was like sticky brown sugar. And Lucas had a horse in the race, and Mel Studi and all the horses had real high action. The horses from California, they didn't know what it was. So we didn't run very well there. But we went on to win a few more races with him, and he was probably my greatest achievement because he won more money for me than anyone else. And it was my only 2 year old. And, you know, we got him to run as a 3 year old. He did well. I didn't really run him as a 2 year old, but I bought him as a 2 year old, you know, and trained him as a 2 year old into a 3 year old year. So, anyway, I would say he was probably my greatest achievement so far. I want to say so far. I want to put that in there.
Yeah. Would you like to have more two-year-olds? Would you like to?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would love the challenge, again, is to have the two-year-olds coming in, you know. And Art Sherman had California Chrome, okay, at Hollywood Park. That horse used to go through my barn every day as a two-year-old. And I told Art Sherman, this is a joke, and he'll back this up. I said, Art, that horse is going to win the Kentucky Derby for you. It was just a little cheap cowbred, you know.
Right.
And I said, that horse is going to win. Oh, he laughs it off, right? He laughs it off. And then it won a stake race, a little sprint stake, King Glorious in Hollywood Park at the end of the year. And I said, I told you he's going to win. He said, that's just a little cheap sprint race. He's not going to win. And then he went on to win the San Felipe and whatever, went right down the line. And then when he won the Kentucky Derby, he says, Dan, you said he was going to win the Kentucky. You were the first person to tell me he was going to win the Kentucky Derby.
So he acknowledged you right away. The first time he saw you.
We were actually talking about that this morning, and the other guys. I don't know why that came up, but he said, "Yep, Dan, you were the first one to say this horse was going to win the Kentucky Derby."
Did you?
I didn't. I just said it jokingly. It wasn't because I had, you know, oh, that horse is great. He was just a little skinny 2-year-old, you know, taking a shortcut through my barn to get to the track at Hollywood Park.
But, and trainers love that, too.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's crazy how that horse went on to win the Kentucky Derby, you know?
Yeah.
So there's hope. And that was the best thing, one of the best things that could happen for this business, too, is because you can get a horse like that that can win the Kentucky Derby, and it gives all the little guys hope, you know, that it can happen.
That's right. It's absolutely, absolutely true. We've had some of those horses over the years. Sunday Silence, he was, I think, bought back at a sale twice. They couldn't even get 17,500 for him, and he went on to be not only a great racehorse but one of the greatest stallions of all time. So
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and the same thing. Wasn't there a horse that won a few years ago too? Well, not a few years, but a little while ago, that was in New Mexico, and the guy vanned it all the way to Kentucky Derby. He won. It was
right.
Like a little $10,000 horse or something.
Yeah, mind but, that bird. You know, mind that bird.
Yeah. So one of those, every once in a while when you're thinking, oh, you know what, this is ridiculous, I can't, and then somebody like Mind That Bird or California Chrome will pop up, and maybe we'll stick around a little longer in this business and see if we can, you know, maybe we can get lucky too, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the best thing for horse racing for the little guys, is that kind of stuff to happen.
Yeah, the little guys drive the game. I mean, you know, the big trainers, they keep the Saturday crowds coming out, you know, with the fancy horses. But the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday crowd, they depend on little stables to fill those races and create handle and make the game
go. Six horse fields, 7, 8, 9, 10 horse fields. You know, the little guys been doing that, and they definitely need to keep us around. You know, I wish there was, you know, back in the day when we were just starting out in the 80s, I mean, you used to go to the stake race, and there was like 4 or 5 great horses in every stake race, you know?
Yeah.
And people would come out to see those horses. They would come to the races because so-and-so is running or so-and-so is running, you know? And we need more horses like that out here, you know, right now. There's really, you know, the California, we need another big name to get people enthusiastic again out here. You know, a horse with a big name like a California Chrome or one of those type of horses.
It seems like the Derby winners most frequently come from California, and a lot of the top competition on the Triple Crown Trail comes from California. But I don't know. I guess that's the Baffert factor. But there's other trainers. Jerry Hollendorfer always has, several horses that are on the Derby Trail, and Doug O'Neill. He's won it twice. That's quite an accomplishment. So,
you know. Yeah, I think Hollendorfer is going to have a few this year that are going to pop up here pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah,
they're pretty excited about a couple of them they got there. So,
got
not
quite
mention
a
any names right now, but you might see them pop up here in the next few months.
Yeah,
contenders.
They've already started working back some of the ones that he gave some time to and whatever. So
I'm excited. You know, Jerry is one that you want to root for. You know, if you knew Jerry's story up at Golden Gate and stuff, you know, and he's such a hard worker. You know, he He flies down here. He works horses here at he's got a big barn here at La Salle. And so he comes here every Friday to work horses, Thursday or Friday. And then he gets to Sandia. Then he flies up to Golden Gate, you know, and he does the same routine. You know, the guy's a hard working guy.
Yeah, he always has been. I mean, he's always been one of the first guys to the barn in the morning. He never left. Talk about vacations. I don't think the guy's ever been anywhere where there wasn't a racetrack.
Yeah, and it's just like, why? You know, I mean, he used to live in a tack room at Golden Gate Field.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, so you root for those type of guys that, you know, started down at the bottom and used to live in a tack room and now look what he's doing, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, I root for him all the time. And hopefully he'll have something big come up this year also.
Yeah, it's not accidental because those guys, they've put in the time. They've done all the work, you know. Bill Mott was on this show talking about when he couldn't get stalls at Centennial Park, Colorado.
I know.
You think about that and you go, really? You know, geez, Louise, that's hard to believe, isn't it? But it's true. And
it's just like Wayne Lucas, what a hard worker he was when back in the 80s at Santa Anita. He was the first one on the track at 3 in the morning. You know?
Right, right.
He was a hard worker, and that's why he was successful.
Yeah.
Very hard worker.
Yeah, but he loves to tell the story about when he hired Kieran McLaughlin. Kieran said, what time do you start? And he said, well, around here we start at 4 o'clock. He said, but it's better if you're here at 3:30. So Kieran gets up the next morning. He's at the barn at 3, and Wayne's sitting at his desk when he gets there. And Kieran opens the door.
And Wayne said, you're late.
Yeah,
I expect you to be here at 3. Even though I told you 3:30, I expect you to be here at 3.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what took you so long, Wayne said.
No, I always remember I always got to Santa Anita at 3 o'clock, and Simon Callahan's in his barn now, his old barn. But, man, I still think that's Wayne Lucas's barn, not Simon Callahan's barn. You know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, because he had that barn for so long.
It's
all those great horses.
In your brain, yeah. Well, we're almost out of time, believe it or not. And we always like to ask trainers if there's something that they really enjoy doing when they're not at the track. I know you spend a lot of time at the track, but do you have anything nowadays that you enjoy doing when you're not at the track?
My life is not the same as it used to be when we used to go golfing every week and play softball and all that. I mean, no, I don't want to bore everybody with my boring life right now, but pretty much I go home every day, get to bed early. You know, I go to Santa Anita, I'll go to the races, you know, or Del Mar. And if I'm not running here at night, because La Salle, it's night racing.
Right.
But I hike a lot, you know, I love to get back playing golf again. But just hiking a lot, you know, and that's it. I don't even go to the movies. I haven't seen a movie in 2 years, I don't think. And no, it's pretty much just it's all horses now, you know. As you get older and once you've done all that stuff, you know, it's not important to you anymore. The important thing is get back to your stable in the morning and get these horses to win. You know, that's my passion now. That's what I want to do. I don't even want to go on a vacation. I have no desire.
You know, well, that's a good thing. We're just about out of time. I love your hiking photos on Instagram. Thanks for taking the time to hang out with us this evening and thanks to our producer, Lee Della Pina, for keeping us on time and organized. Remind everyone to tune into the Equine Forum Saturday, 8 a.m., Sirius 219, XM 206, and streaming live on our website, horseracingradio.net. This is Jude Feld from Lexington. Good night, everybody.